The main theme that's come across when I talk to local government officials in the past few weeks here is just that this is an unprecedented moment, because you can't look at the infrastructure bill on its own. You have to look at it in the context of it's coming in the wake of the American Rescue Plan Act, which sent $350 billion in direct aid to state and local governments. It's coming as Congress is on the cusp of passing this Build Back Better spending bill that would funnel billions more dollars to the state and local level, including money for transit investments and things like that. So I think really what I'm hearing is sort of this feeling like this is a game-changing moment.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. President Biden may have signed the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act 8 days ago, but for us, it's still Infrastructure Week.
Now we head into the implementation phase. This is where the rubber's going to meet the road. What you'll see next is you're going to see a DOT and other federal agencies setting the rules. You're going to see state and local departments preparing grant applications, making plans for how they'll spend additional funding that's going to flow in their direction. So this will take some time.
Bill Lucia is a senior editor at Route 50, an online journal about state and local governments. As such, he's been hearing a lot from state and local leaders on their thoughts about the $1 trillion Infrastructure Act. There's always the urge to spend the money as fast as possible. But Lucia says local lawmakers learned some lessons in 2008 when Washington sent some stimulus money to states, cities, and towns.
So after the Great Recession hit and the stimulus money came down, there was the concept of shovel-ready projects and putting people to work on infrastructure projects quickly. And some people will argue now, looking back on that, that maybe some of those projects weren't the ones that should have been prioritized. So this time around, there's a real sense out there on the part of state and local government folks that they want to take their time with this funding.
Take their time, because this once-in-a-generation infrastructure funding probably won't be seen again for, let's say, at least another generation. However, infrastructure timescales do not match electoral timescales, so there will be a lot of pressure on local officials for projects that are, if not shovel-ready, then at least photo-op-ready.
Another dynamic that's in play in terms of how quickly this money gets out the door is that with the midterm elections on the horizon, there are definitely going to be Democrats who want to see this money flowing sooner rather than later. So they'll be able to point to how this major legislative achievement that they have, how it's making a difference on the ground in their districts or their communities or their states.
Lucia says, of course, though, this is about something bigger. State and local officials have both an opportunity and a challenge. As they rebuild today, they must also think about how their communities need to function in the future.
What people at the state and local level, I think a lot of them are thinking about, is how do you use this federal investment that really is, this is once in a generation money. I mean, this is the one time they're going to get an infusion of federal funding like this. And so they're trying to think about, how do you re-envision how your city, you know, is making transit investments, or how those transit investments are going to connect with housing, or solving these longstanding problems that the country has around pedestrians getting hit by cars and stuff like that. So that's kind of the thinking here, is rather than getting the money out the door fast, I think a lot of places are trying to think about how to get the money out the door smart.
That was Bill Lucia, senior editor at the online journal Route 50. So this hour, we're going to speak with state and local government officials to hear how they're going to strike that balance. What does getting the money out the door smart mean to them, and therefore to you? So joining us now today from Augusta is Maine Governor Janet Mills, a Democrat. Governor Mills, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. And also, let's jump over to the other coast, where Mayor Aquanetta Warren joins us. She's serving her third term as mayor of Fontana, California. She's also chairwoman of a Republican organization called Community Leaders of America. Mayor Warren, welcome to you.
Welcome and thank you.
It's great to have you. And then we're sort of bouncing all across the country here. Let's go to Philadelphia, where Derek Green joins us. He's council member at large for Philadelphia, chair of the city council, the finance committee, and the Philadelphia Gas Commission. He's a Democrat and member of New Deal, a group of progressive state and local leaders. Council member Green, welcome to you.
Welcome, and thank you, Meg. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's great to have all three of you. And because, you know, we here in the national media, we've been talking a lot about the infrastructure bill, the $1 trillion, what's being said in Washington, you know, the back and forth that happened in Congress. But now there's a chance to really understand from the three of you what difference this is going to make and how you're going to envision your very communities for the future. So let me just start with that basic question. And Mr. Green, I'll start with you. Can you tell me just quickly, what kind of difference could this infusion of funding make for Philadelphians?
Well, this could make a significant major investment in the city of Philadelphia to really improve the quality of life of the citizens of our great city. When I think about our transit authority, Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Authority, or SEPTA, 25% of our citizens use SEPTA to get to work, to get to childcare, to get to activities around our city and region. And the fact that SEPTA has not been able to make some of the investments that they need to improve that travel time, to make those investments and opportunities for those constituents, is very important. So not only will it help the quality of life, but when you also think about the city of Philadelphia having a 25% poverty rate and opportunity to help grow businesses in our city, to help people in our city come out of poverty and grow entrepreneurial opportunities in our city. So not only can improve the quality of life from transit, but also can improve the economic conditions of our city.
And the two are inextricably intertwined, as you're saying. It's a point well taken. Mayor Warren, what about you? In Fontana, what are the biggest needs that can be met now as the funding gets released to state and local governments?
It's important that we do everything we can to make sure that every citizen is safe. We have several challenges right now with that safety issue as it relates to infrastructure. We have applied 4 times for the RAISE grant. As a result of that, we just found out last week that we did not receive it. But we're encouraged because with this amount of money, it's going to be easier for cities such as our size with our demographics to actually be in line for these type of grants. For instance, we've got a project that is bordered by our two cities, Rancho Cucamonga and Fontana, where the students try to get to Etiwanda High School on routes that are not safe. Mm. They keep safe in terms of staying off the road, but there's no sidewalks. When it rains, the water goes over the road, the traffic, and more importantly, if there is an incident, we cannot get our first responders down the street. In addition, we have needs for sewer throughout the city. We're an older city, but we're still a new city. We're a smart city, but we've got places where there's septic and we need to convert those to sewer. And then we need more interchanges in terms of our quiet zones with the railroad services, as well as trying to put a parking structure in our downtown area that is updated with the latest technology for electrical vehicles. And then there's broadband. Mm-hmm. We need broadband. It's just a horror at 3 o'clock when students get out of school. They're hanging around the library so they can do their homework. Or they're sitting in a fast food restaurant parking lot trying to do their homework with their parents because they don't have internet.
So this is really a chance to show how government can work for people. I mean, you're all describing really fundamental needs that have to be met. And by the way, just for the sake of clarification, Fontana is in San Bernardino County, right, Mayor Warren?
Absolutely. The great county, the largest county in the United States.
Okay. And those RAISE grants that you're talking about, that's discretionary funding from the Department of Transportation for roads, bridges, transit, rail, that kind of thing. And you said you have applied several times and haven't received it yet.
Right. And It was impossible to get that, especially with the amount. You got to look at the larger projects. I get it. But now I'm encouraged.
Okay. So Governor Mills, let me turn to you. You've got to look at, you know, the entirety of a big state here right. that both has some urban centers and a lot of rural needs as well. So how do you, where do you think the money can be best used, or how could it be best used for Maine?
Well, thanks, Meghna. It's a rural state, and we have the most dispersed population of any state in the country, frankly, because when you talk about urban centers, our largest city is has fewer than 67,000 people.
Urban for Maine, let's put it that way.
Right. It's a great city, but it's not large by national standards. So we have infrastructure issues that range the gamut. I mean, the most immediate need is going to be the highways and bridges. We have something like 23,000 miles of roads across the state of Maine. We're 90% forested. So, and with a challenging geography and bridges, about 3,000 bridges maintained by the state, one out of every five of those bridges is older than 80 years old. So, you know, unlike Philadelphia and Fontana, we've got a set of aging infrastructure. We got your beat there. 58% of our bridges are more than 50 years old. They're still strong, but some of them need structural improvements for obvious reasons. So roads and bridges is a big part of the funding that we're receiving. But I think more interesting is the broadband money mm-hmm. and the funds for electric vehicle charging stations. I'm really looking forward to putting that to work as quickly as possible. We enacted a Maine Connectivity Authority this summer, and I've appointed the members, and that's a statewide authority. I think it's the first and only one in the country to funnel any and all federal funds for broadband into the state of Maine and to help the regional areas determine what's best for them and to make sure that those internet plans are affordable for the communities in question. We spend a lot of the federal money through the pandemic, the CARES money, some American Rescue money on buying hotspots and internet devices for thousands of students who were not able to Zoom into their classrooms when the classes went remote. The pandemic, of more than anything else, highlighted the need for effective, affordable broadband across the state of Maine. We have those funky peninsulas. If you drew them out in a straight line, they'd be longer than the coastline of the state of California. Yeah. So it's difficult to lay fiber and that kind of thing. But that's a big challenge. And electric vehicle charging stations, we're very anxious to put that to work, yeah. too.
Well, Governor Janet Mills in Maine and Mayor Aquanetta Warren in California and Council Member Derek Green in Philadelphia, hang on here for just a second. When we come back from our break, we'll keep talking about how state and local officials would like to really put that infrastructure money into their communities and what it'll take to make it happen. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we've got a roundtable of state and local leaders to talk with us about how they would like to put the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act to work literally in the fabric of their communities. I'm joined today by Derek Green. He's a council member at large in Philadelphia. Governor Janet Mills is with us. She's the governor of the state of Maine, and Mayor Aquanetta Warren joins us as well. She's mayor of Fontana, California. And let's listen just for a second to Shafwan, an On Point listener who called us from Detroit, Michigan. He's seen his city and state's infrastructure crumbling his whole life, he says. And he wants repairs that are long overdue.
Being born and raised in Detroit and growing up in the Rust Belt, I've seen how much our cities and states have fallen behind. I mean, you constantly see in the news stories about the water infrastructure causing health issues for people, whether it's lead poisoning or other illnesses. So definitely the water infrastructure and the roads here in Michigan. Yeah, just hoping those two things are at the top of the list and get addressed. Thank you.
That's Shafwan, who called us from Detroit. Now, I know all three of you individually feel and can understand how for people in your cities and states, There is that sense of impatience, if not urgency, about the need to really put this money to work right now. But I'd also like to take an opportunity to sort of have a little civics lesson here, because this much money doesn't get spent overnight. So I'd love to understand the process a little bit by which infrastructure dollars are going to get put into the ground in the various places that you are. So, Mayor Warren, let me just start with you. Who else will you have to be interfacing with in order to decide how, you know, money finally gets apportioned for the various projects that you had on your wish list there?
Well, we started with our own visioning as a council, and then we are working now with our county of San Bernardino to make sure that we address issues that relate to a bigger group. Regional projects work very well in our particular county. But more importantly, we're just waiting for the rules to come down and the grant applications, and we're ready to go. We've already been writing grants in this area, so we just need those rules, and we're off and running. But it is going to take time, because there are regulations that basically talk about you need to do environmental studies depending on the project. We've got to acquire the land or work with the owners. There's a lot that comes into play when you're trying to do these projects. Mm.
And when you say rules, you mean rules from the portion that the federal government still has control over, or rules from the state of California, or where?
We're going to have to deal with national and state and county rules, in that they tell us what the funds can actually go for. And then we have to put those to work based on the parameters that our laws are set up for.
Mm, okay. So, Derek Green, same question to you. Obviously, your POV as a member of the city council there. You have the council. You have other city leadership, the state of Pennsylvania as well. How is it going to work? How's the decision-making process going to happen?
Well, it's going to be a coordinated approach. Just this past Friday, Congressman Dwight Evans and Congressman Brendan Boyle provided a briefing on the infrastructure program for, you know, elected officials in the city of Philadelphia. Philadelphia is both a city and a county, and we're going to have to work with our federal delegation. We'll also work with our governor, Governor Wolf. I'm the past president of Pennsylvania Municipal League, so we've had a good working relationship with the governor. And it's also going to be about how we file the regulations, as the mayor stated. One of the benefits of being involved as a board member with the National League of Cities is that they provide a lot of information and guidance that can help direct cities, municipalities, and villages all around the nation, and how they can best utilize these dollars. Because we want to make sure that we are using these infrastructure dollars for deferred maintenance and projects that we really did not get a chance to really invest in, like we did coming out of the Obama administration, but really focus on this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to really improve the quality of life of the residents in our communities.
Yeah. So what's interesting, and Governor Mills, I'll turn to you on this, is that, again, this is a civics lesson here, because I think we all as Americans need to understand how money moves from the federal government, taxpayer money, back into states and municipalities. So regarding the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the money basically is going to be allocated to various federal agencies, Department of Transportation, EPA, Department of Energy, Commerce. And then, if I understand correctly, that money then gets allocated to state governments in the form of grants and loans, basically over the next 5 years. That particular allocation based on formulas the federal government has already calculated. So from your perch as the head of state government, you're the first stop, essentially, when the money gets distributed to Maine. What are you going to do after that to then get it sort of into those bridges and to that broadband that you talked about?
Oh, hey, we're here with open arms. In large part, these new federal funds are supplemental to existing funding channels And so, for instance, the roads and bridges money will come to the Maine Department of Transportation and sort it out in accordance with a three-year plan that the department does based on engineering studies and scientific information, not based on, gee, do we fix Governor Mills's sidewalk first, or, you know, not on political criteria. But, and that's a plan that is reviewed by the Maine, the Transportation Committee of the Maine Legislature routinely and approved by them. So we've got that to start with. We have the Maine Connectivity Authority to help funnel the broadband money into the state and disperse it to regional locations in accordance with a plan, individual plans. Drinking water, same kind of thing. It basically goes through existing channels. I'm really excited, too, about the new grant possibilities for village-focused transportation programs. People are coming back downtown now more than ever before, and we envision complete street transportation programs emphasizing pedestrians and bicyclists and other non-vehicle traffic, and that's going to be something, if we get those kinds of grants down the road here, so to speak, we'll be able to accommodate the people who come downtown now. And our villages, like Ogunquit and Kennebunkport and Farmington, Maine, are more important than ever. Since the pandemic began, we see people coming downtown and wanting to shop locally, and we want to help, we want to accommodate that. And I just want to give a shout out, too, to our congressional delegation, which is truly tripartisan. We have a Republican Senator Collins, Independent Senator Angus King, and two Democratic members of Congress, all of whom fought very hard for broadband funding in particular. And that's very exciting to us for a rural state like Maine.
Well, you didn't mention Congressman Jared Golden, who voted against the infrastructure package.
No, he voted for the infrastructure package. He voted – he did not support the Build Back Better bill last week. I think that's accurate.
Okay. I might be getting my once-in-a-generation spending plans confused here.
No, I think he supported infrastructure.
I am going to fact-check myself here in a second.
Please do.
Because I do not want to get that wrong. And forgive me if I did. Okay. So I will get that fact-checked. But let's continue on as well. So Mayor Warren, I'm seeing here that California could, over the next, I think by next spring, according to CNBC, or summer, could get something like almost $45 billion. But what we're hearing also in terms of how it's going to be apportioned from the state to the local level is talking about some programs that are already in place and other things like grants. So is there a concern from the municipal level, Mayor Warren, that like cities and towns are going to essentially kind of be in competition with each other for some of this critical funding?
Absolutely. But one of the treasures in California is we're desperately working as regions, and we have our own transportation authority, and we already have projects ready to go that we've all been voting on and need that extra help. So we're going to activate our ability to work with the state and our legislators to get the funding where most needed. That's really exciting for me. We have various projects that are in the queue right now, but probably are lacking that last part of funding. And we'll be working with those legislators to make sure that we get our part. And from the city's perspective, we already have shelf ready, ready to go. And what we'll do is make sure we begin meeting with our legislators to make sure that as these grants come in, we can get their support toward getting those grants to where it's most needed.
Mm. Well, so Governor Mills, I'm just going to jump back to you for a second because, again, sure. On that fact check, I did get it wrong. My apologies. Congressman Golden did indeed, of course, vote yes for the infrastructure bill. Very, very sorry about that.
As is Congresswoman Pingree, of course.
We try to get these facts right. And I got to admit when I got it wrong. So that now we're clear on that. So Derek Green, let me turn back to you here. Same question as I asked Mayor Warren, because, again, like there's a lot of need everywhere. And it could the needs of Philadelphians be pitted against Pittsburgh, for example?
Well, that is a concern, and I love my friends from the western part of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, but we have some very critical issues in the city of Philadelphia, and for me, one of the main issues I really focus on is energy. Philadelphia has the Philadelphia Gas Works. It's the largest municipally owned gas utility in the nation. I chair the Gas Commission, which is an oversight entity for PGW. And we're 185 years old, and we have 6,000 miles of gas main, and we have about 500,000 customers. And the concern is that we are a seasoned, as my father would say, a seasoned city. So we have seasoned infrastructure that has gotten very, very old and creates emissions and leaks, and that's a problem. But we also need to focus on the future, and we're going through a diversification study right now. So we're trying to get the opportunity to really use these infrastructure dollars to make additional repairs on our gas mains, even beyond what we currently do, but also provide us with the opportunity to transition a 185 gas utility, which started as a lighting company, to some type of future energy company that's looking at other types of ways of providing energy beyond using natural gas.
Mm. So, you know, I want to not necessarily be the full-time interlocutor here between all three of you. Please feel free to jump in and talk with each other, because I think it's not that often that we as Americans get to hear how state and local leaders, you know, might discuss these really important matters with each other. So feel free to do that.
Do you want us to compare potholes? I mean, we can do that. I can have a contest. We have a contest every spring during mud season.
Full-time
who's got the worst pothole in their town?
Race to the bottom.
So if you,
I got Philadelphia. I know that.
Let's keep the potholes in the western part of the country. I was going to say, keep the potholes on the western part of the country where we have big potholes versus salt from the winter snow.
I was just kidding.
The governor can relate to.
What I wanted to bring up, this is Mayor Warren. One of the parts of this bill that people are not talking a lot about is where you come up with projects that provide an economic development opportunity. For instance, we get that road fix that we've been applying for, which is really a safe route to school. That opens up over 536 acres of land opportunity just alone to provide jobs, to build a hospital, to bring in more financial and school institutions. This infrastructure bill is the best that we could probably see since Roosevelt's New Deal. So I call it the newer deal. And as a result of that, we've seen the long-lasting effects of the New Deal from Roosevelt's era. We need to make sure that these funds, the newer deal, have that same effect on the way this nation operates.
That's a great point, Mayor Warren. May I add from Maine here that we're talking about roads and bridges an awful lot, and we're not just talking about improving roads. We're also talking about climate change, and these funds fit right into Maine's climate change, climate action change plan, because you know, with broadband allowing people to work remotely, telehealth, teleeducation, et cetera, and electric vehicles. We hope to install hundreds, if not thousands, of electric vehicles up and down the state. We border Quebec province on the west, and Quebec has huge numbers of electric vehicles. We want them to continue visiting Maine and provide the infrastructure that they may do so, and provide incentives for Maine people to buy electric vehicles and electric pickup trucks very soon. Everybody's got a pickup truck in this state. So, and that money goes right through the Efficiency Maine Trust, which we developed some 15, 20 years ago to, help with rebates for electric vehicles and help install electric vehicle charging stations with other sources of money other than general fund appropriations.
Hmm.
Wow.
Derek Green, did you want to add to that? Because I know that these issues of economic development, climate are really front and center in Philadelphia also.
And all of these, I mean, from what the governor and the mayor both stated, you know, these provide opportunities from quality of life perspectives, but also the economic development opportunities. And when you think about, as the mayor said in reference to the New Deal, and this is a new deal, what impact newer New Deal. Think about the economic impact that had on our country when you go back to the New Deal. Not only did it provide opportunities from a quality of life perspective that enhanced the entire nation, but all of the jobs and the companies and the entrepreneurship opportunities that grew coming out of that, that really provided a robust economy in our nation. You take that now to coming out of this global pandemic and how devastated – the economies of so many cities like Philadelphia and Fontana and the state of Maine, and having the ability to put more people back to work in family-sustaining jobs and help to grow companies that will have benefits for generations. So it's not just impacting us from a improvement to our infrastructure. It's going to impact us from our economy and growth going forward, where we as a nation really need to compete with countries around the globe.
Okay, you know, we've got just a minute left before the next break here. I'm going to offer all three of you a question and duck under the table, right? Given the importance and what can be accomplished with the money that's coming from the Infrastructure Act, and here's where I'm going to duck. Don't you wish it had happened a lot sooner?
Yes. I certainly do.
It's been decades.
I was elected in 2010 as mayor. I was on the council before, and I'm a retired deputy public works director, and I dealt with it daily. I put my whole spirit into trying to do more infrastructure. That's what helped our town grow where it's at now. And this is it is a godsend. I really agree with our council member on the line, Council Member Green. It's a godsend because now we can really not just dream. We can try our best to make it happen.
All right.
We're tired of pouring gravel into holes in the spring and pouring skinny mix on thousands of miles of roads that doesn't last.
So that was Governor Janet Mills. And you also heard Mayor Aquanetta Warren and Councilperson Derek Green. They're joining us today in this roundtable of state and local leaders to talk about how really now that trillion plus dollars can be put to work in localities across the country. So we'll have more to come when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and we are going to be continuing our informal infrastructure week tomorrow, because what we're going to take a look at is a claim that President Joe Biden made when he signed the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act into law. He talked about the fact that the $1 trillion in the Infrastructure Act would, for the first time in 20 years, mean that the United States is investing at a higher rate in infrastructure than China is. It's an interesting comparison. So tomorrow we're going to talk about what it would actually take for the U.S. to truly have world-class infrastructure. So we want to hear from you. If you've traveled abroad, not just to China, but any country around the world, and you marveled at their infrastructure, their roads, their bridges, their trains, their broadband, anything, airports, subways, what have you seen around the world? What have you experienced internationally that you wish we could have here in the United States? Would love to hear specifics on things you've seen globally that you wish we could have in U.S. infrastructure. Tell us your story at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for tomorrow's show. Today, we've got a terrific roundtable of state and local leaders talking to us about exactly how they would like to put the $1 trillion to work in their states and municipalities. I'm joined today by Derek Green. He's council member at large for Philadelphia. He's chair of the city council as well, a Democrat who's a member of New Deal, a group of progressive state and local leaders. And he joins us from Philadelphia. Governor Janet Mills is with us. She's the Democratic governor of Maine, with us from Augusta, Maine. And Mayor Aquanetta Warren joins us as well. She's the mayor of Fontana, California, in her third term. Also chairwoman of Community Leaders of America, a national forum for Republican mayors, city council members, and county leaders. And she's with us from San Bernardino, California. Now, I'm just going to ask the three of you to listen along for a moment, because we want to go back to Bill Lucia, the senior editor at Route 50, that online journal for state and local government. And we asked him a critical question, and that is, how can the American people know that the $1 trillion-plus in the infrastructure project that will be spread across the country in the coming years will be used in a manner that's on time, on budget, and not corrupt boondoggles?
Anytime you have a large amount of federal funding flowing down to states and local governments across the country, there's always the potential there for waste, fraud, and abuse to arise. You know, apart from just pork and fraud and stuff like that, a lot of these infrastructure projects that happen across the country, I mean, especially big ones, these projects are relatively complicated. They can involve complicated contracts. They unfold over years. They tend to have cost overruns and things like that. California's high-speed rail project is one example where you're seeing for a number of years now, that project's been plagued by rising costs. Kentucky had a broadband project that took longer than expected and is going to be more expensive for the state. In each of these cases, there's unique reasons for it. But really, at the end of the day, what it comes back to is building big infrastructure is complicated. But, you know, states and local governments, they build infrastructure all the time without incident or much fanfare. And a lot of those are important projects, revamping sewer systems or fixing bridges and stuff like that. Just the more routine infrastructure work that goes on out there. A lot of the projects that go right, they don't get a ton of attention.
Now, the Infrastructure Act was a bipartisan bill, but Lucia says it's a real victory for the Democratic Party, and therefore he thinks Republicans are going to be keeping a close eye on the spending.
What could be interesting, too, is if Republicans were to retake one chamber of Congress, you'll also see probably some fairly aggressive congressional oversight at that point, too, in terms of scrutinizing how some of these dollars get spent.
Again, that was Bill Lucia, senior editor at the online journal Route 50. Okay, so let me ask the three of you. You can forgive the American people for perhaps having a little bit of justified cynicism when it comes to full trust in how massive federal funding may be spent on the state and local level. So, Mayor Warren, can I just start with you? I mean, what lessons do you think were learned from the stimulus funding in 2008, because as we heard earlier, not all of that was maybe spent on the projects of greatest need or impact at the time.
You know, I clearly understand why people would feel like this is may not work or it's not what it says, but it's all about how you relate to your public. We're very transparent in our city, and we were able to get over 4 interchanges. That really helped. We're the goods movement of the United States. When people can drive over something that they can be proud of, they've suddenly realized things are getting done. So we always say promises made, promises kept. We keep an active program where we explain to our citizens weekly what we're doing. I myself have a TV program called Mayor Says, basically Mayor's Monday, and we report on all the latest based on questions received from the public. We are, as I mentioned, very regional. We have various, like our transit authority, San Bernardino Transportation Authority Group, and we have a track record that is second to none. So I'm anticipating making sure that we get our public relations out on these issues.
Mm. Well, let me just follow up with you on that really quickly, because, as you know, the stories in 08 and 09 about golf courses getting built, for example, with that stimulus money. I mean, how can you assure people today that we're not going to end up with more golf courses under the guise of, well, it might, you know, be environmentally or climate friendly because it increases green space?
This comes back to stewardship, and it also comes back to commitment to integrity. But if you look at the way the stimulus money has come down for the COVID money that we all received, we're still waiting on the regulations before we spend that money. If we're following the regulations, we should not have those problems. And also, you cannot put everybody in the same bag. Some places did take advantage of that, but our track record has been great at our city, and we continue to make sure we do everything in a proper manner.
Now, when you say for COVID relief money, you're waiting for regulations again, from whom, though?
From the federal government, from the federal level, to make sure that we're spending those funds adequately.
Okay.
And some cities and counties have already jumped out there, but we're not doing that. We're waiting for those regulations to come down final.
Okay.
Every week they're changing them, so we're just waiting till they're finalized.
Okay. And Derek Green, did I hear you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I just think it's very important what Mayor Warren said. It's important to provide transparency, but also regular, consistent information. She has a show called Mayor Speaks. I know I do a public access show called Public Comment. But having that regular communication with your constituents, letting them know on a regular either Monday or Wednesday or Thursday, just a ongoing communication that helps to provide that information and provide that level of trust for constituents that, you know, these are big issues. This is hard. It took us a long time to get this infrastructure bill passed. It's going to take us some time to get the resources and get these projects done. But when you do that type of regular communication, you can have that give and take with your constituents to help provide more trust into the conversation and dialogue about these very challenging issues and projects to get done.
Mm. So I'm going to cut this issue of transparency and especially infrastructure. I'm going to come back to in a minute because it's really important. But Governor Mills, maybe you can help us understand something that Mayor Warren brought up, and that's unspent COVID relief money that I think people right now are wondering why in year two of the pandemic are some CARES Act funding still not hasn't been spent by states. Now, I'm looking at Governing Magazine, one of our favorites here at On Point, and they had some numbers as of late September. So they're a couple of months out of date here. But as of late September, they said in Maine, there was still some $77 million at least left to be spent from CARES Act funding or COVID relief funding, I'll put it more broadly. Can you just explain to me sort of your view on why it's taking so long to get all of the money out there?
Well, thanks for the question. I think money spent versus money committed is two different things. We're keenly aware that money from the federal government is taxpayers' money. Every dollar is tax dollars. The federal government doesn't create budgets like the Wizard of Oz behind a curtain. We respect the transparency and accountability. The Department of Treasury has issued regulations. It took a while for them to issue regulations for a lot of this money, particularly the American Rescue Plan money. But the CARES Act money in the state of Maine is pretty much all committed, if not spent by now. And we've reserved some for emergency purposes. We've had workforce issues and health care and things of that sort. Additional PPE to schools and testing equipment for schools and that kind of thing. So we've planned and we've spent according to the plan. I think we're accountable. We have online accountability, sort of a digest of what every dollar is spent for of the CARES Act funding. Hmm. And the same will be true for the American Rescue Plan funds and the same for these funds. The infrastructure bill is pretty well dedicated to specific measures. I don't think anybody would see us building a golf course with that money. And I'm not a big golfer anyway, but with a small state with 1.3 million people, somebody would notice if we misspent the funds.
Okay. So that's interesting. So that there's more specific... Well, the federal government has put some specific limits on how some of the funds can be used. But I reiterate, a lot of the discretion is at the state and local level. And so to get back to this issue of transparency, look, infrastructure is notorious for not being entirely transparent. I mean, whether it's still currently true or not, I think there a lot of Americans might feel like it's a realm where backroom deals kind of can drive decision making. So go ahead.
I have to say that's just not so in the state of Maine. And we have a Department of Transportation that's been run objectively in a nonpartisan manner for years and years. And they do a 3-year DOT plan. And the committee, Transportation Committee, that oversees that is a very bipartisan committee. They know that we have a backlog right now of $230 million a year in road and bridge repairs. They know which bridges are deficient, which ones aren't. They know which miles of roads are deficient, which ones are not. That's all in the plan. And they know how we're going to spend that money. It isn't going into anybody's back pocket. It's going into roads and bridges that are seriously deficient across the state of Maine.
Yeah.
And it's very transparent, very visible what we're doing.
No, good. I appreciate the pushback.
Let me just say one thing, and then
Mayor Warren, I promise I'll turn to you. I am pushing on this because people... This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity, right? And it's incumbent upon all of us to be sure it's spent, as I said at the beginning of the show, for the best future in all of these places that we're talking about. So I'm going to keep pushing on this. I appreciate the pushback to my pushback. But Mayor Warren, please go ahead.
You know, you have to understand, locally, everyone has a capital improvement project plan. The state is adamant about how those plans are created and how we actually initiate them. And we have people that attend our meetings regularly. We have all this communication that goes out. There were issues at one point in California about redevelopment funds. And I assume there was a city that used their redevelopment to do a golf course. Now, in that case, they felt that was their way of developing their economic engine. But overall, with all the social media and all the other transparent reporting that occurs, it would be ultimately impossible to do that. And keep in mind, infrastructure is not a party-affiliated issue. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you're a Democrat, a Republican, or whatever. People want to feel safe. They want to be able to drive down the road without falling into a huge pothole.
Yeah. So go ahead, Derek, just jump in real quick. Please.
No, both for the mayor and for the governor, you know, even receiving these infrastructure dollars, we still have to appropriate these dollars through our executive and legislative process. So like here in Philadelphia, you know, the mayor provides the budget address as well as every year a six-year capital program. So even when we receive federal dollars, it'll have to go through that capital program that we have budget hearings, you know, very detailed budget hearings that you can go through over the years to see how we are spending in the past and how we're going to spend in the future through our six-year capital program. And any infrastructure dollars will have to go through that same capital program, and eventually it'll be the same thing in Maine and the same thing in Fontana.
Yeah. So you mentioned another important thing there, and I do want to just ask, and Mr. Green, I'll turn back to you on this, about the potential for overspending or going over budget. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. Because that is... I'm going to respectfully reject it if anyone says that doesn't happen in infrastructure, because we know it can for a lot of different reasons. I mean, is that you're talking about SEPTA, for example. I'm sitting here in Boston, Mr. Green, where we have a public transit system that's in dire need of help and projects regularly run over cost. Again, for lots of different reasons, but is that a concern in terms of of diminishing the full potential that the infrastructure investment might have?
Well, that's always a concern. I started my career in the private sector as a banker, so I'm very focused on numbers and getting projects done on time. But it's also a challenge when you are in the public sector because you're dealing with multiple entities. In Philadelphia, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we deal with things like four-part bidding and other things that are the average person may not be aware of that can slow the process down. But we also have other things that are beyond our control, like the increase in steel or timber or inflation, which makes things what we thought would be one cost one day when you're planning, but when you actually issue the RFP and you select a vendor to do the work, costs may have increased. And so all of those things impact the perspective of how we get things done. And these things also happen in the private sector as well. It's just a challenge to try to make these happen in a way and give the public that transparency.
We've got less than a minute left to go. So Governor Mills and Mayor Warren, we'll give you about 15 seconds each, okay?
Sure. The price of steel has more than doubled, and the estimates coming in from our RFPs are like 20% over our engineers' estimates for these various roads projects. So we're going to be very careful about how we parse this money out. But we welcome the accountability. We welcome the scrutiny. of individuals, federal and state and local, and we're just very excited to put this to work for the people of Maine.
And Mayor Warren, you got about 10 seconds here.
Supply chain issues are going to be a major factor in developing these programs, but we also welcome this opportunity, and we thank our congressional and state leaders for making sure that we can partner with them to make it happen for our great public.
Well, Mayor Aquanetta Warren, Mayor of Fontana, California, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Governor Janet Mills of the state of Maine. Governor Mills, it was great to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Magna.
And Derek Green, council member at large for the city of Philadelphia. Mr. Green, thank you.
It was a pleasure to be on with this outstanding panel.
I'm Magna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.